This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. America is the world's top producer of hazardous waste. How do you get rid of PCBs, dioxins, acids, and heavy metals? One way is to ship it off to other countries, countries with less stringent environmental standards. Exporting our toxic stew, legally and illegally, has become a lucrative business, but it's having a disastrous effect on the environments of the countries on the receiving end. The international traffic in hazardous waste was the subject of a 4-year investigation by the Center for Investigative Reporting. It resulted in a Frontline special on public TV, hosted by Bill Moyers, and a new book called Global Dumping Ground. My guest, Dan Noyes, was the project director for the center's investigation and one of the writers of the book. He co-founded the Center for Investigative Reporting in 1977 and has since written for Mother Jones magazine and developed stories for CBS's 60 Minutes and ABC's 2020. Noyes told me some of the reasons for the increase in global dumping.
The amount of waste we're creating, hazardous and otherwise, is going up. We're now estimated to produce in the U.S. alone 500 million tons a year. And the places to put it in the U.S. are going down. Our landfills have gone down from 1,500 to 325 over the last 4 to 5 years. So basically, the cost is going up, the places to put it are going down, and the pressure cooker atmosphere to find other release valves for this waste are causing people to go overseas. It's now also essentially you're in a smuggling type situation where people, it's to their benefit to try to get this stuff out of the country illegally. They get a lot of money to be made. It's becoming similar to gun running and drug smuggling and so forth in terms of something that people on the border, the Customs Department, for example, is starting to get much more interested in this as an issue.
Well, there are a lot of like booming businesses as a result of this of the toxic waste. Sometimes toxic waste are exported through middlemen. This is one kind of new business. And there are there's two brothers named the Colbert brothers who are in federal prison for related crimes. Now, they describe themselves as being in the surplus chemicals business. Describe for us what they actually did.
Well, they took all kinds of products that were no longer of use to sometimes major corporations, sometimes the military, U.S. military, U.S. government agencies, state agencies. For example, the Department of Agriculture, State Department in North Carolina. We first were alerted to the Colbert brothers back in the early 1980s because they were getting calls from the brothers to take off their hands a lot of pesticides that were no longer usable in the United States because of laws banning their use. So they were coming in saying, we can take these off your hands, you won't have to dispose of them. It's still legal to ship these banned pesticides out of the U.S. to other countries that are willing to use them. The Colbert brothers made a business out of taking things that other countries might still find usable in some way because their laws are different than the U.S., and sending them over there and basically making a profit because they were either getting these things for free, taking them off people's hands, or even getting paid to take them off people's hands because it would be more costly to dispose of them than to pay somebody to take them off your hands. It's a little bit like a one man's ceiling is another man's floor situation where hazardous waste in some people's eyes might be actually considered a usable product if it's sent over to another country. The problem is that many of these countries don't have the regulations, don't have the people to carefully monitor the situation. And what happened with the Colberts is that they sent what they said were cleaning solvents and dry cleaning fluids to the country of Zimbabwe in Africa. They turned out to be laced with wastes, very corrosive and hazardous wastes. And what really caught them up in this scheme was that the Zimbabwe company in Africa that was purchasing the materials was getting the funds to do so from the U.S. government through the Agency for International Development. U.S. taxpayer money was going to purchase this, and when this became made aware to the AID, Agency for International Development people, they looked into the matter, investigated, and ultimately helped bring the culprits to justice.
So what they're doing time for is shipping a false bill of goods. They're not doing time for being in the business of being toxic waste middlemen. I mean, that was perfectly legal.
It was. They really got caught up on fraud. And in fact, I mean, one of the points we make is that very few people have been convicted under environmental regulations and environmental laws, and it's very difficult to do so. This is a new area of law enforcement, and there are now being established in certain parts of the country environmental cops or strike forces. Some people even have referred to them as sewer cops, who will actually do things like go down into sewers, analyze where waste is coming in the sewer system, and track it back to the source of the waste. People that are dumping things down into the sewer as a way to get rid of it. The culprits got caught because they mixed in. They claim it was someone else's fault, but they mixed in with this supposed dry cleaning solvents and so forth, some toxic waste. And that was considered fraud and a fraudulent activity that they were prosecuted for.
So just to clarify, the chemicals that they exported that can't be used in the United States, it's legal for them to export them. It's just that they were
cases,
responsible for fraud. Are there any laws against exporting chemicals that are illegal in the United States?
There are only notification laws that the receiving country has to agree to accept them, but there is no law that prevents an exporter from exporting something that we, our government, or people in this country believe may be dangerous to the receiving country. There is no law preventing them from exporting that to that country. The laws are basically a notification law and not a prevention law.
My guest is Dan Noyes, and he's a co-founder and co-director of the Center for Investigative Reporting. And for the past 2 years, he's been project director for the Center's investigation into global dumping and the international traffic in hazardous waste. They produced a documentary for public television and a companion book called Global Dumping Ground. Another interesting personality involved with the international trafficking of hazardous waste is someone who is known as the Scrap Metal King, and this is Joe Chin. To describe what he does, he's a supplier of scrap metal from the United States.
Right. He calls himself, refers to other people calling him the King of Scrap Metal from the Far East. He's someone who has been taking a great deal of scrap waste in the United States and shipping it overseas to principally to Taiwan during the 1980s, and now he's moved on to the mainland in China. He takes the material, everything from used computers to transformers, all kinds of industrial and product waste, scrap junk. I mean, it's essentially what we used to refer to as junkyard waste, and ships it overseas, where because of lax regulation and the low cost of labor, this can be processed down into a certain amount of recoverable metal. The problem is that as Taiwan has found out, this is a very polluting industry, and it's very difficult to police. Basically, as the head of the EPA in Taiwan told us, all you need is some gasoline and a match to start getting into the scrap recovery business. The problem is when you burn, for example, copper wire to get the copper out of it, you release dioxins from the covering when it's burned. Other sources of hazardous toxic material that come out of this kind of waste are PCBs, various types of oil, cadmium, lead, And it is part of what we call recycling, but it has a very hazardous, dangerous side to it. And what we found with Joe Chen was that when regulations in Taiwan, for example, were starting to close down this industry, he was then moving on to China to establish this, and basically where there weren't very many regulations. And he talked about how others were doing likewise, moving on to countries like Singapore, Malaysia, Pakistan, India, to carry on this kind of work where the regulations were lax and the labor was cheap.
Well, Taiwan decided to shut down its scrap metal imports because it was having such a disastrous effect on the environment.
Right. They talked, the head of the EPA there talks about how they have what he calls a death river. Basically, it's been so polluted that no fish live in it. Again, people have been using recycling this metal along the banks of the river, but in the process heavily polluting it. And there's also the smoke from burning and just the piles of waste that are left over. You recover a certain amount of metal from this scrap, but you leave a lot of waste after it.
Well, the Scrap Metal King gave you a great tour for your research. Would you describe what his scrap metal mountains look like?
Well, he took us on a trip to the mainland China, where he is pioneering the scrap metal, international scrap metal business on the mainland. And in fact, mainland China has become a growing area of imports for them. They are starting to import more, for example, car batteries and so forth into that country from the U.S. all the time. He took us to his plant, which is in southern China, near the coast, near Macau. And his workers there get paid about $2 a day to process waste that's coming in. I think 150 truckloads a month is what he was receiving there. And it's everything from huge electrical engines that are 6 feet high, where the workers are pounding out the copper wire that's within the these motors, to even license plate holders saying "Have a nice day," that kind of thing from all over the west coast of California, where they're reclaiming the metal, but the leftover debris or the hazardous debris is getting dumped into a large ravine alongside the plant there. And he showed us the ravine, which was quite extensive, and said that in 3 years' time, it would be filled up with the leftover waste from this scrap recycling business.
Why has China been behind the industry until this point?
They see it as a form of financial help for their country. They basically use it as a way to obtain foreign currency, hard currency, and their economy is so hard pressed that again they've been increasingly involved with this in the last couple of years. Their imports have gone up substantially in the scrap metal field.
You mentioned car batteries before, that Taiwan had become a center of used car battery imports. Yeah, it's something you really don't think about when you get a new battery. What happens to your old battery? It's filled with hazardous acid. There's lead in the battery, too.
Right, and the estimates are that in the U.S. alone, about 70 million car batteries are disposed of every year. That's 70 million gallons of sulfuric acid and over a billion tons of lead being dumped out or reclaimed in some fashion. And what's happened is that as there is cheap labor overseas and lacks regulation, many of these batteries have been going overseas where they're reclaimed in situations where the environmental regulations are much less severe. What we found in Taiwan, for example, is that school children near the lead smelters in Taiwan were showing very high lead levels, which is a very hazardous condition, particularly for children, and that their IQs, when they were tested, were found to be affected by the lead ingestion that they were getting from these plants. So, in fact, in one case, a kindergarten had just been evacuated in the past year when we were in Taiwan filming because they found that the children had very high lead levels from the lead smelter, which is bringing in basically its source of lead is used car batteries from the U.S. and from Japan.
Gee, so you have countries around the world who are basically recycling American waste, but in doing so, creating a lot more waste.
They're recycling and making useful product out of our discarded goods, but there is a cost. There is an environmental cost to doing that, and as experts have told us, recycling is a useful activity to keep the waste under control, but it's not the best way to try to attack the problem. The real effort should be on reducing the total amount of waste to begin with, or even reusing products. For example, just in the kind of soft drink containers we have where that's recycled, those things are recycled, the best way would be just to have them reused the way they used to be 30 years ago. That's less energy intensive and less environmentally harmful. But the society in the U.S. that we've created is heavily into marketing, packaging, as a way to sell products, and we are burying ourselves in waste.
We were talking about hazardous waste that's shipped around the world, but there's also a lot of hazardous waste in the United States that just crosses the border and stays nearby. Canada takes in 85% of all exported U.S. waste. What do they do with it?
Well, they primarily put it in two landfills, two companies that operate landfills, Stablex and Trisil, are the major end recipient of this waste. Canada, in fact, does even ship some waste to the U.S. for disposal. The border and the close proximity sometimes makes business sense for doing that kind of toxic trade back and forth. But what we found in our research, for example, was that the northeast part of the United States would probably be the part of the country that would suffer most if there was a ban on exporting waste. They are really dependent on Canada as a final resting ground for a lot of their waste. That's because they've been closing down a great many of their landfills. People have not wanted to build incinerators in neighborhoods. They feel they're too dangerous, and the again pressure cooker type atmosphere that's built up with this toxic waste makes Canada and other countries, but principally Canada, the only place that they can get rid of this stuff.
What's in it for Canada to take in so much waste from the United States?
Well, it's a booming business. Waste management generally has been a very booming business over the last 10, 15 years. And the countries see it as it helps the balance of payments. It helps jobs and economic situation related to where the landfills are. And it's a way that they can create businesses in places that may be depressed otherwise. Landfills generally tend to be in areas away from people or away from large centers of population, and so those kind of depressed areas can become attractive for the companies that are trying to dispose of this kind of waste.
Do you think that there should be a law against sending waste to countries that have less strict environmental controls than we do?
I think that only through strong measures like that will people finally be forced to come to grips with the fact that we're producing more and more of this waste every year and running out of solutions to deal with it, and that we've got to address more of the core problem, which is how do we create products that don't produce this kind of waste? How do we build into the system a way to factor in the full costs of selling a product when, in fact, you know, disposing of that product, the environmental effects of disposing of that product may be very costly, but the company that produces the product doesn't have to bear that cost. How do we really put pressure on the society and on the system to come to grips with the full costs of our society? And that's where I think a ban can really ultimately help solve this problem as well as we're going to be capable of doing it. There are problems with that. For example, as I said, if the Canadian border was closed off to waste from the Northeast, there would be some serious economic repercussions. And I'm not prepared to say that those aren't substantial. But I think in a very general sense, a ban is really going to be the way to get the international community to sit down and really try to, and the business community to sit down and really try to figure out this problem.
On the other hand, it would be imposing the United States environmental standards on other countries.
It would, but there is a growing international movement to try to most of the African countries, for example, and many countries around the world are totally in favor of banning all exports. They see themselves as you know, really the victims of this kind of trade, and it's only a few countries that have really pushed it in terms of being recipients of this waste, and then, of course, the developed countries that are producing so much of this waste have pushed the idea of keeping the borders open as well. So I don't think, even though people attack this as, some kind of imperialism, we're imposing our standards on other people. I think by and large around the world, people are looking for this protection. They're not worried about having these standards imposed on them.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
My guest has been Dan Noyes, and he headed up the research project on the international traffic and hazardous waste for the Center for Investigative Reporting. Their new book is called Global Dumping Ground.